Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
They're going to defund Planned Parenthood, deny over 2 million women the right to choose the health care that they need.
That was Bernie Sanders on CBS Face the Nation Sunday. And we'll dig into one provision of the Trump-Ryan health care plan now that isn't getting much attention. It's the one he named right in that bill. In addition to transforming the health insurance system, as they end Medicaid as a federal right to health insurance for poor people and withdraw the health insurance mandate and subsidies and lower the funding for Medicare and increase the aging penalty on insurance premiums and hope the market evens all that out, right in that bill, they would also defund Planned Parenthood and try to establish that the same amount of money goes to other women's health providers that don't offer abortions. We will talk in a minute to a leading New York City OBGYN and an expert on safe versus unsafe abortions. But first, here's a two-minute exchange on this issue so you know what they're talking about in their words with Speaker Ryan from a CNN town hall in January moderated by Jake Tapper. This begins with a question from a member of the town hall audience.
Among a lot of other things that we have heard in the news, Planned Parenthood also provides cervical cancer screenings, annual examinations, as well as other critical health care services. And I will continue, and I have used these services for the next 4 years. And I can tell you personally that Planned Parenthood provided help when I couldn't go to anybody else. So my question for you, Speaker Ryan, is if Planned Parenthood is defunded, then where will millions of women, low-income groups, and
it's a good question. First of all, I want to make sure you get the care you need. We want to make sure that all women get the kind of care that they need, like preventative screening and services like you're talking about. We believe that this can better be done by putting that money in federal community health centers. Federal community health centers, I have a lot of experience with them myself. They're all throughout Wisconsin. They're in virtually every community. By putting these dollars in the federal community health centers, which provide the same kinds of services, for every Planned Parenthood, there are 20 federal community health centers. They're vastly bigger in network. There are so many more of them, and they provide these kinds of services without all the controversy surrounding this issue.
Can I just ask you, you believe in providing more choice for people when it comes to health insurance, except for Planned Parenthood?
Well, there's a longstanding principle that we've all believed in. And by the way, this is for pro-choice, pro-life people, that we don't want to commit taxpayer funding for abortion. And Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider. So we don't want to effectively commit taxpayer money to an organization providing abortions, but we want to make sure that people get their coverage. That's why there's no conflict by making sure that these dollars go to federal community health centers, which provide these services and have a vast larger network than these Planned Parenthood clinics, which are surrounded by a lot of controversy. And we don't want to commit people's taxpayer dollars to effectively funding something that they believe is morally unconscionable. Not everybody believes that. I understand that. But that's a longstanding principle we've had in this country that we want to maintain.
Of course, taxpayer dollars don't fund abortions right now, right? Because of the Hyde Amendment?
Because of the Hyde Amendment.
Right.
But they get a lot of money, and you know, money's fungible, and it effectively floats these organizations, which then use other money. You know, money's fungible.
A lot of...
You don't have this controversy by funding health centers.
House Speaker Paul Ryan in a January CNN town hall. The framework he laid out there is in the Trump-Ryan health reform bill. So let's get a response from two guests. Jamila Taylor is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Previously, she was a senior policy advisor at EPAS, a global non-governmental organization dedicated to reproductive rights with an emphasis on ending preventable deaths and disabilities from unsafe abortions. Also with us, Dr. Ann Davis, consulting medical director for Physicians for Reproductive Health. She's a professor of clinical obstetrics and gynecology and director of the Family Planning Fellowship at New York Presbyterian Hospital and Columbia Physicians Group. Welcome both of you to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming on.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Speaker Ryan said in the clip that the same amount of money now going to Planned Parenthood would go to other women's health providers, especially what he called federal community health centers. which he says are much more numerous than Planned Parenthood offices. So there will be no loss of women's health services under this bill. Dr. Davis, how credulous or incredulous are you about that claim?
Well, I agree with Speaker Ryan that these are important services, and I was glad to hear that he said that they were important services. What I'm going to be very clear on is that I do not agree that we have a parallel system, you know, that sort of across the street from every Planned Parenthood, there's an FQHC, one of these community health centers that's ready to go, and people can just walk over there and get all of the same services. The numbers he cited, I'm not familiar, but sounds like there are a lot of FQHCs, and there's plenty here in New York as well. But those are not facilities that are dedicated to providing the services that Planned Parenthood provides. And I think what people forget is that Planned Parenthood doesn't just provide services like cancer screenings and contraception. They do it in a way that is extremely cost-efficient, and they do it in a way that is very, very high quality. So we don't have another provider in the United States that can absorb the patients that Planned Parenthood currently serves, which is many, many, many millions of underserved, you know, women who really need these, who get their services at a low cost and at very, very high quality. So it's very disappointing for all of us who are in OBGYN, you know, across the board. My colleagues are all really disturbed by any trend where we would remove Planned Parenthood from the pool of providers for women with Medicaid and low-income women generally.
So Jamila Taylor, Dr. Taylor in the PhD sense, while Ann Davis is Dr. Davis in the MD sense, what do you think the impact would be on women's health if this goes through? Ryan would argue that if there's all this money, the same amount of money that now goes to Planned Parenthood, earmarked for women's health to federal community health centers, then the services are going to become more robust in that area and women's health will not suffer.
Well, I would respond to that question by saying, first off, we need to look at the patients that Planned Parenthood serves. Right now, Planned Parenthood offers services to about 2.5 million people in this country. 75% of those patients are below the federal poverty line. 60% of them access their health care through Medicaid or the Title X Family Planning Program. So we're talking about a provider that not only offers quality reproductive health services to communities in need, but it's also a provider that does it in a way that puts the patient at the center. Non-judgmental services for young people in need of information about sexuality education, for young people that may need access to contraception. And yes, Planned Parenthood does provide abortions. It's a small portion of the full array of services that the organization provides. And, you know, as was stated in the clip, federal funds are restricted, are prohibited from providing or covering abortion-related services. And so none of the funding that Planned Parenthood is receiving through Medicaid reimbursements or Title X funding is going to cover abortion services.
So if that's the case, then can you at least say with confidence that this change, if they pass it in Congress and it's signed by the president, would not make abortion any less available in America than it is today, at least that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say that it wouldn't make it any less available. What I would focus on in terms of the context of this conversation is what it would do is make access to contraception and the education that communities need to prevent unintended pregnancies unavailable. And I think when we have a situation like that, where you have more women in need of contraception that don't have access to it, we will see an increase in the need for abortion. And so I think that's what we should be focused on in the terms of this conversation. Abortion is an important component in the continuum of reproductive health care. And when we talk about sort of separating it out or discussing it as separate from health care, it only serves to stigmatize an important legal medical service.
Which is exactly, Dr. Davis, what they're trying to do, stigmatize abortion further by not even funding an organization only for non-abortions that even provides abortions, Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, it's sort of a vicious circle, and I appreciate that we get to talk a little bit about that. Abortion's a legal service in the United States, and yeah, Planned Parenthood provides abortions. They do it very well. They do it very safely. They've certainly had their share of controversy around the services that they provide, but they're providing a legal service. So it's very unfortunate that these two things get conflated. But again, you know, federal monies are not used to pay for abortions. They haven't been. They aren't. I think a lot of people, and maybe some of your listeners, might be confused about that. They might think that when they say defund Planned Parenthood, they're talking about taking money away for abortions, and they're not. They're talking about specifically what is being discussed from this or included in this bill is that women who have Medicaid wouldn't be able to use their Medicaid to go to Planned Parenthood. So whatever health insurance any of us might have, right, you go to the doctor, you see whatever you're going to do in the medical system, you give them your health insurance, and then you use your health insurance to cover those services. So what this is saying is that Planned Parenthood can't be a provider for women who have Medicaid. It's not that Planned Parenthood is getting a big check from the federal government to do clinical work. This is just services they provide, and they're accepting Medicaid. And keep in mind that we don't have, you know, as I said before, we don't have a giant system of people that are clamoring to provide services to low-income women with Medicaid at very, very, you know, in really, really high-quality way. That is what we get from – that's why so many people go to Planned Parenthood, right? If we had some other system that was so fantastic at doing this, we wouldn't have so many women who use Planned Parenthood as their provider. They know if they go to Planned Parenthood, they're going to get high-quality care, they're going to be treated respectfully, and it's a really great place to get care for a lot of young women across the country. So it's really disappointing.
Judy and Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Judy.
Hello. I can't even – think of anything that comes close to the definition of a federal health provider in Manhattan. Would it be a health and hospitals corporation clinic? And you know, I'm familiar with Bellevue clinics. They're not terrible, but I would far prefer to go to Planned Parenthood if I had Medicaid, but higher quality probably, but certainly a more pleasant environment. And if I may, there's another point I'd like to make. Ryan made the point that money is fungible, and that, well, okay, so we're not giving them money to for abortions to be performed, but somehow it keeps them afloat, and that allows them to perform those darned abortions. Well, a question should be put then to Ryan and whatever agency is involved in oversight of the distribution of this kind of money. Well, are you actually checking to see if the lines are not permeable? And if not, doesn't that mean that the federal government is falling down on its job? And I'm asking this question as someone who would actually like to see the Hyde Amendment repealed.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you're saying if it's effective, then the money really isn't fungible. Jamila Taylor, do you want to respond to Judy?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just reiterate the point, you know, that you made, Judy, is that, you know, unfortunately, we have this longstanding restriction, 40 years now, the Hyde Amendment that, you know, prohibits federal funding from covering abortion for women on the Medicaid program. And again, we're talking about a bill that would keep, you know, basically you're denying Medicaid patients the right to access reproductive health care. These reimbursements are being submitted for a specific set of services that are not, you know, covered by public funding. And so I think the question about, you know, the money being permeable and, you know, the lines being blurred, I don't think that's an issue here. I mean, this is really about, you know, spewing myths about Planned Parenthood as a way to, you know, restrict the funding. And I'll also add, this is, at the end of the day, this is not about hurting Planned Parenthood. It's about hurting low-income women who access their health care through the Medicaid program.
Evelyn in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm really, really upset that no one compares how Paul Ryan easily claims that it's morally reprehensible for some people to fund a portion of Planned Parenthood, yet I pay tax dollars that fund wars, and I find that just as morally, if not more morally reprehensible. And I can never, ever opt out of paying my taxes that go to, I believe in peace. I believe in many other things that I can't control where my tax dollar goes.
Right, because the politics are different in Congress regarding abortion than they are about war. But Jamila Taylor, I'll come back to you with this as a policy person. I don't know why somebody couldn't bring a case under the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, because in effect, Paul Ryan and company are imposing their religion on all the poor women of America by saying that that is the morally reprehensible line. You know, the moral line is, well, many of us in Congress, enough to keep voting in the Hyde Amendment, don't find abortion morally acceptable, so we're going to lock it out of Medicaid. I don't know why that's not imposing their religion on everybody else.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, not only do they impose their religion in terms of their views on access to abortion, but it's imposed in other ways, too. I mean, we have protections in the law that actually, you know, allow some of these providers to deny women, you know, and other folks access to health care services based on their religious or moral objection. And absolutely, it's really a problem. And I agree with the caller that, you know, our, you know, taxpayer money is going towards other things that we would rather it not go towards, and war is one of those things. And, you know, we don't have a choice of deciding. You know, we can't check a box in terms of what we want our tax dollars to go to and what we don't want it to go to. And funding to support comprehensive health care for women in the long term will not only help make communities healthier, but it will also help in terms of helping women and families thrive and lead more economically secure lives.
Erica in Richmond, Virginia, you're on WNYC. Hi, Erica.
Hi. I wanted to know, since Medicaid has never, to my knowledge, funded access to abortion, how does a woman on Medicaid, if they were to go to Planned Parenthood, pay for an abortion? Do they pay out of pocket? And if so, is it a very expensive procedure?
Dr. Davis, do you want to take that?
Sure. So we have a whole patchwork of ways. So there's no kind of standard way across the whole country because it depends on what state you're in. So let's say you're in my state, you're in New York State. In New York State, women who have Medicaid can use Medicaid for an abortion. That's state Medicaid funds, not federal funds. So if you have federal funds can't be used, but state funds through Medicaid can be used.
Can I jump in here for one sec? Because I think this is a really important point to make sure that everybody gets in New York State. You can get a Medicaid abortion in New York State because New York State uses its Medicaid dollars to allow it. And I'm not sure about New Jersey and Connecticut, the rest of our primary listening area. But I don't want to leave women with the impression through this conversation that despite the Hyde Amendment, despite the federal funding ban on Medicaid abortions, that you actually can't get one, because you actually can in the state of New York.
Right, and New Jersey and Connecticut.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, or let's say you have some other kind of health insurance through your employer or through something that you pay for, you know, through the open market or something through the ACA. And then it's plan by plan in terms of what your insurance will cover related to abortion. So some will cover things broadly. Some will cover one kind, maybe with surgery, but they won't cover with medicine. It really depends. And so when a patient calls to for an abortion service to make an appointment, we have to check in with her insurance and see what's going to be covered. It can be very stressful, as you can imagine, because no one plans to have an abortion. So no one really looks into this insurance coverage until the moment arises that this is something that they need. But that's kind of like all medical problems, right? We never expect to have them. When you have your insurance, you're always hopeful that it'll cover it. In the case of abortion, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And for people where it doesn't, they are paying out of pocket for the service. And that, you know, when we really look at the case of women who are low income, that's where it really becomes stressful and really kind of medically complex and disappointing, because early abortion is the least expensive kind. And if you don't have insurance coverage, be it through Medicaid or be it through your own insurance, then you have to come up with the money for this thing that you weren't planning to need. And then as you take the time to come up with the money, and for some people it's a big financial burden, time passes, right? So then the abortion is more complicated. Maybe you have to go to a different facility. Maybe you have to go further away. So when we remove coverage for abortion, we make it more expensive, more complicated, and less safe. So really covering abortion is really good for women and good for public health, good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Kathy in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, how insidious is this comment about money is fungible? You know, you could look at it this way. If the federal government gives block grants for Medicaid to the states, does that mean the states can use any of that funding for patients who are getting abortions? And what about hospitals that get federal funding, say, for their residency programs? Does that mean those hospitals and those residents cannot be involved, you know, in providing abortions? It's a very insidious comment, this thing about fungible money.
It could become the next step if they chose to go there.
Yes, it's like a backdoor to getting rid of abortion.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, thank you. So, Dr. Davis, since you practice in New York, what's the local picture? Are abortions much more available here than they are in, say, Texas, which has been very much in the news for controversial abortion restriction law, or other states with more conservative politics?
Yeah. It's a big difference. Here in New York City, we're fortunate. We have a number of abortion providers, and we do, you know, the environment depends also on laws of the state. So in New York State, we have generally supportive laws. We have Medicaid coverage, which is very important. And so women in New York State, and at least in urban areas in New York State, do have access to abortion pretty broadly, and that's a great thing for patients, for my patients. When you go to rural parts of New York, it's kind of like other rural places. You have to travel to get those services, but we don't have the kind of onerous restrictions and environment they have in other states. So you know, in many states, for example, if you decide that, you know, you make an appointment for an abortion, you go to your appointment, and then you have to hear counseling. Maybe the counseling is truthful, maybe the counseling is not truthful, and then you have a waiting period. So, you know, you have to get your counseling, and then you have to go home and, you know, think about it for 3 days or 1 day or 48 hours, whatever your state decides is the right amount of time.
Is the counseling is the risks associated with abortion?
Right. And talking to a woman about what an abortion is, I think most women are pretty clear about what an abortion is. In my own case, in my own practice, I'm an abortion provider. And certainly when people come for their appointments, we talk about briefly, but most people are pretty certain about what they want to do when they come in. And if they need more time, they need more time. But to force people to leave the clinic and come back in a few days when some people have to travel a great distance really serves no purpose other than to put up a barrier. So
I wonder,
we don't have
if
a waiting period in New York. Mm-hmm. We don't have mandatory counseling. Certainly nothing we have to say that is false. In some states, you have to include false information in your discussions with women about abortion. So in New York State, I think it's a pretty supportive environment. We're very fortunate in that sense for our patients.
Do they have to inform them about the risks of unwanted pregnancy and childbirth and child rearing as well?
Well, you know what? I think it really abortion shouldn't be separated out from other medical procedures. So, you know, for any medical procedure, what do? You hear about the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives. If you're going to have your gallbladder taken out or if you're going to have a stent put in your heart, you hear about the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives. And so anytime we have a discussion about an abortion, we do the same thing. It isn't special. That's part of our counseling. It's what we do. And certainly we don't need the government to be sitting there in the chair next to the patient telling us what to say.
We're going to run out of time shortly, but Ms. Taylor, on the question of safe versus unsafe abortions, which I know is one of your specialty areas, how much does the medical profession have a standard that there should be abortion providers in each community or major health facility. Sometimes abortions are medically necessary for the life or health of the mother, sometimes on an emergency basis. Almost all the late-term abortions, which are so controversial politically, are, you know, for medically urgent reasons. What happens if, because of politics, no one in a community is trained? Is there a standard in the profession?
You know, if no one in the community is trained, it means that a woman is inconvenienced. I mean, I will say that abortion is still hard to get in this country. I mean, there are a limited number of abortion providers nationally. Also, you know, whether or not you live in an urban versus rural area has something to do with, you know, the quality of providers that you have in your community. So I think it really is a question about, you know, it does come down to zip code. And one of the things that, you know, those of us in the reproductive health and rights community advocate for is the fact that women should have access to comprehensive reproductive health care, including abortion, regardless of her zip code. Mm. And I think that's, you know, the point that we want to make in terms of accessibility. Abortion is still very hard to access in this country, and there aren't enough providers.
I'm going to let Brian in Brooklyn on for a very brief turn as a male ally, as I think he'll want to portray himself.
Great. Thank you, Brian.
Brian, you got 30 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear me. Connection problems earlier. A tip of the hat to the lady, to the doctors out there. As a man, I would, you know, I'm becoming a little more conservative as I get older, but I'm from a rural town upstate originally, and most of my female friends did not have access to just basic care, regardless of abortion, et cetera. A lot of them got involved in the STARS program. Teenage pregnancy was a huge problem in my community, and a lot of them were becoming peer counselors, et cetera. And I would just like to challenge all these old people, evangelical Christians. It's easy to take the moral high ground. How about some financial high ground? You're spitting on these young girls going in there for services. How about you put up or shut up? Offer to adopt their children if you think that's the better option. This is a major problem, and I would just like to offer support. I have a daughter, and she may or may not come upon certain choices in her life. Like I said, I'm becoming a little more conservative as I get older, but I would absolutely support a woman's right to decide with her doctor what she thinks the best course for her health is.
And I wonder, Brian, guy to guy, if male reproductive health was as complicated as female reproductive health and needed a specialty for it and standalone clinics existed, would Paul Ryan and company be so quick to defund the male health clinics?
Well, just the way we are physiologically different, I think this is a question that, you know, we'd never get to solve. Apples and oranges, et cetera. But I think, we need to respect the systems, the natural systems that exist, and we need to provide as much care as possible for the people who have the least options.
And it was a rhetorical question.
I'd rather have public education programs in the school as a taxpayer, as opposed to if this moral question of taxpayer money going to abortions is so irreprehensible. Why is it that the people who are so anti-abortion are pro-death penalty and also anti-sex ed in high school?
Brian, thank you very much. Well, here we're going to have to leave it with Dr. Ann Davis, Consulting Medical Director for Physicians for Reproductive Health. She's a professor of clinical obstetrics and gynecology and director of the Family Planning Fellowship at New York Presbyterian Hospital and Columbia Physicians Group. I hope I got all that right. And Jamila Taylor, senior fellow at Center for American Progress. And you have a new report coming out today.
Yes, we do. The report is called The Pillars of Equity, and it's focused on the intersection of economic justice and reproductive justice. And in the report, we talk about that framing as well as some of the current policy issues that are at stake for women's health and rights in this Congress and as well as through the Trump administration.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, an argument against saying check your privilege and using privilege as a central organizing principle in fighting for equality. Stay with us.